Hi there, it's Mags, the author of The Ugly Duckling Diary, and I have decided to read my book to you. So, without much further ado, let's get into the next chapter. It seems redundant, maybe, but I just want to take a second to note that this book, and therefore the reading of this book, is full of information about and examples of toxic and abusive relationships. This may cause you to remember or unpack some of your own experiences and memories if you've experienced similar relationships in your life with your parents or otherwise. So take your time, expect to be dealing with some emotional responses, make sure you have breaks and connect with people who can support you. Most of all, remember while you are reading this that these are memories and snapshots of my journey, and I promise that I made it into the light. And in the words of my dear friend and fellow survivor, Lisa White, there is nothing so special about me that you can't do this too. The Parental Prequel. Since neither of my parents shared much about their past, I have tried to piece together snippets of stories, accounts shared by other family members, as well as my own experiences, in an effort to understand where they were coming from. My father was the second of seven children. As far as I understand from my aunt, his youngest sister, with whom I have a wonderful relationship now, he came from a very loving and warm family. My great-grandfather had moved the family from the rural north to the capital to join the city's police force when my granddad was only nine. My father was born in the early spring of 1944 in occupied Amsterdam. Footnote. The last winter of World War II in 1944-1945 was one of famine in the Netherlands, especially in the cities. German blockade stopped food and fuel shipments from the farm areas coming into the more densely populated areas. For some 4.5 million Dutch citizens went cold and hungry, and an estimated 22,000 people perished in the Dutch famine, locally known as the Hunger Winter. The Hunger Winter was a historic event that happened while my father was still an infant, something he often referenced when my mother commented on his eating habits, when he would have huge helpings at dinner or overloaded his sandwiches. He especially loved piling on chocolate spread. He would say, "I cannot help it. I was born during the Hunger Winter." My grandparents were very calm people, and they created a loving family environment. My grandmother had been an only child, so she had never really been used to arguing, something we often learn while bumping heads with our siblings. My grandfather, meanwhile, disliked conflict so much that you might say he was allergic to it. As soon as two people would disagree about something, he would immediately try and diffuse the conflict and make peace again. This extreme aversion to conflict is something my father definitely inherited from his father. My father had one older sister, born before the war, and had five younger siblings. My aunt recalls that even as a child, he could go to great lengths to get what he wanted without creating conflict. The first child born after my father is his only brother, and as younger brothers do, he wanted to copy my father's behavior. As soon as my father would play with a toy, his little brother would want to play with that toy too. Rather than putting his foot down and stating his claim to the toy, he would come up with a strategy to get what he wanted without having to create conflict. Let's say he wanted to play with a toy car. He would pick up the spinning top and started playing with that, making sure to be vocally happy with the toy. That would entice his little brother to want to play with the spinning top, and my father would graciously give it up. Then he'd move on to the toy car he'd been wanting to play with in the first place. I actually think this story is really quite sweet, but the reason I'm telling you it is that my father's complete lack or willingness to stand his ground and engage in conflict is something that got him into trouble when he met my mother. It led him being completely overrun by her personality and lose himself in his marriage. My parents met in the late 60s when they were both volunteering at a summer camp. My mother tells the story that she needed to get away from it all when she broke off an engagement. Her boyfriend had announced the engagement to everybody, including both their families. He had just forgotten to actually propose to her first. So she broke it off and went away for the summer, only to meet her future husband, my father. My father and mother were married at the end of the 60s when they were 25 and 23 years old, respectively. She had just started working as a teacher and he was still at university completing his studies. They welcomed their first daughter to the family about 4 years later. Family planning went well, and daughters 2 and 3 arrived within the next 3 years, right on schedule. It took a few years for me to arrive in 1979, 10 years into their marriage. My father must have been disappointed, though. He had always wanted a son to carry forward the family name, as though they were some aristocratic family or something. But after 4 girls, my mother told him it was probably never going to happen, and he had to settle for his 4 daughters. I actually know surprisingly little about my father's younger years, although I have been learning more from talking to his sister. I know he worked as a greengrocer for a while because I once found a photo of him working. When I asked him about it, he was dismissive and didn't elaborate. That was typical of our family. We rarely spoke about my parents' younger years. I know my father studied theology, but never finished the course. I learned from my aunt recently that he had been struggling to pass his classes, and that's why he changed his field of study. Having grown up in a family that valued happiness over achievement, his parents would say that if being a garbage collector is what makes you happy, be a garbage collector. And marrying my mother, who embraced her family's conviction that ambitious achievement is the ultimate goal in life, I wonder if he felt conflicted about dropping out of his course, which, of course, carried prestige for my mother. She, as we will explore a little later, was obsessed with her image as a devout Christian. Still, he gave up on theology and eventually graduated with a sociology degree specialized in research methodology. He would spend all of his career working at the same university he studied at, creating software to crunch research data from practical experiments. Sorry about that. My mother is the oldest of 10. Being the oldest and a girl would have meant that she was expected to help care for the babies and help around the house from an early age. My oma, Dutch for grandmother, was 30 when she had my mother and had 9 more children as well as 3 miscarriages, so there was plenty of helping to be done. Whereas my father's parents both passed away when I was still very young, my mother's parents were a consistent presence in our lives, at least in our younger years. Despite this, I don't have a lot of personal memories about my opa, Dutch for grandfather. He had a stroke when I was a kid and passed away when I was 17. I do remember, though, a time when I went to stay with my grandparents for a week. I was still young, maybe 5 or so. My sister went with me, but still I suffered from immense homesickness. I cried myself to sleep every night. Opa did not approve of such displays of emotion and lack of self-control, but no matter how hard she tried, Oma could not console me. I remember her almost frantically trying to calm me down, often saying that I had to be quiet or Opa would be upset. Despite all her efforts, I could not control my sobs. On the last day, my parents were to pick us up after dinner. We were having dessert. We were having a dessert of yogurt when the doorbell rang. My sister got up to open the door and said hello to my parents. I went to get up too, but Opa said, "Not before you finish your dessert." He made me eat every last bite of my dessert while Oma and my sister were in the next room catching up with my parents. I remember I was fuming with the injustice of it because my sister had not finished her dessert either. It is one of the few times I remember feeling such anger, and it was because I knew I was being punished for something that I felt I shouldn't be punished for. I will not have been able to articulate that feeling, of course, but even as a young child, I knew that being punished for emotional pain, in this case homesickness, was unjust and wrong. One of the very few stories my mother ever shared about her father was that if any of his children would slouch at the dinner table, he would position a walking stick across their backs and make them hold it in place in the crooks of their arms. They would then be expected to finish their meals. I can only imagine how uncomfortable it must be to eat with your arms restricted by a cane that is pushing into your back. I understand that there have been some generational shifts in philosophy, but this too sounds like a harsh approach to parenting. Given this story, and of course my own experiences with Opa, I'm sure that whatever went on in that house exactly, Opa was not a warm father. I'm sure that my mother will have faced many emotional challenges of her own while growing up. That there were far more traumatic things going on in that family is clear. One of my uncles cut contact with the family after Opa passed away. Although I was a teenager at the time, I have very little knowledge of the circumstances. I was dealing with health issues and trying to get through my secondary school exams while on Valium for pain management. So I was dealing with health issues and trying to get through my school exams while on Valium. I still don't really know how I managed that, but I did. Anyway, I am still not sure how I... Oh, here, it even says so in the book. I'm still not sure how I ever managed that. But more than my less than focused state, my parents were secretive about what was going on, like they so often were. They were displeased with his choice, which is understandable, but I remember them being angry to a point of aggression in their comments. I never received any real explanation of the estrangement, even as an adult. Once, when I was in my 20s, my father told me that my uncle cut contact with the family because he had sexually abused some of his younger sisters. My father followed this up by saying, "Don't tell your mother I told you, you're not supposed to know." I was shocked and confused by these words, but any further discussion and questioning had obviously been shut down, so the only processing I could do was in my own mind and with my then limited knowledge of such matters. Looking back now, with reference to all my learning about abuse in recent years, I find it hard to believe that my uncle would only be an abuser. It is usually not the abuser, but the victim who walks away from a situation, and therefore it is more likely that he was a victim before becoming a perpetrator. That is, if what my father said about him is true. He only shared that once, and I have not seen or heard any further indication that this happened. All I can really and definitely say about it is that people do not break contact with their happy, healthy, emotionally balanced families. So whatever happened in my mother's childhood home, it was enough reason for my uncle to break contact. Unfortunately, my mother was never able to face the trauma of her past, and it influenced her attitudes, choices, and behavior throughout her life. For better or worse, one of her defining character traits, which I believe is rooted in her emotional trauma, is the absolute need for control. Everything and everyone has to behave exactly the way she feels is the correct way. My way, or the highway, is the suffocating truth of interactions with my mother, and I know many people who have been unable to cope with it, myself included. What is interesting to note is that any deviation from her expectation is experienced as a personal attack on her. I've often wondered if her need to control people and life in general is a reflection of her inability to control her inner world. Of course, that is me indulging in a little living room psychobabble, but it does make me think. It is this need to control that lies at the root of all abusive relationships. Let's explore. But we're not going to explore that today. We're going to explore that in a next episode of the Ugly Duckling Diary podcast. That is quite a mouthful. There's a lot of sort of speculation that's going on here because, like I say at the start of this chapter as well, I don't actually know very much about where my parents are coming from. This is stuff that I've, you know, this is a lot of this is sort of hindsight. And that's, you know, it's me interpreting some of the stuff that I know and some of the stories that I've heard since then. But yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's the experiences that I had as a child with my parents didn't just fall out of the sky, right? They are rooted in their experiences and how they grew up and how they learned how to interact with people. So, you know, it's and this is always the case, and I have this conversation a lot with people because when we look at this sort of, you know, the abused becoming the abusers, there's a lot of talk around that kind of thing. But just because I'm trying to gain, I always say, just because I'm trying to gain understanding is as to why my mother became the person she is, or why she behaved in the way that she did. You know, it's not a, me understanding and that she's come from a place of trauma herself doesn't excuse her behavior. It just explains her behavior, because this is the thing, like, we can say, like, oh yeah, but I was traumatized, so I didn't know any better, or I don't know any better. But the responsibility to heal from our trauma is with us. The responsibility to not inflict pain on others. And I've been in that situation. I've done things that I'm not proud of, and I think every human being in this world has. But we need to own those moments as well. But I think sometimes it's hard when we're in this healing journey, you know, and we're, especially at the start, where we're kind of coming to this realization of, oh my God, what happened to me isn't normal. This is not how families usually function. This is not how relationships are supposed to go. And then we kind of get, stuck in that thinking. I've definitely experienced that, where there's this feeling of, if I start exploring the circumstances that may have led to the situation, then I'm finding excuses for people who have treated me poorly. And if you're feeling like that, that's totally okay. I'm not telling you that you can't feel that way. But I also think that finding these underlying stories and these patterns doesn't take away the responsibility that your parents or your partner or whoever in your life may be impacting you, doesn't take away their responsibility to treat other people with respect and kindness. So anyway, this is, I know that this is sometimes a little bit hard for people to wrap their brain around, but yeah, this is my exploration of why we got here in the first place. I hope you enjoyed this chapter. I would love to have you back next week for another chapter. In the meantime, if you want to read along or read ahead, please get a copy of the book from Amazon, and you can follow me on Instagram at Swan Waters. Yeah, that's it. That's it for me for this week. Have a good one. See you next week.